Hello, everyone. Welcome to the I Get Buckets podcast. I'm your host, as always. My name is Simon, and it's been a little bit since I've jumped on the mic. Weeks now. Who knows how many weeks? We always do the end of season kind of team reviews, and usually I like to kind of get them done before the NBA season finals kind of wraps up. And the main reason because of that is because the website undergoes some maintenance, and you kind of lose all the information that I'd want to draw on for reviews, and it sits dormant for a few weeks, but it was a little bit different this season. They kind of seemed to have the maintenance earlier, and it was done and fixed and whatever they needed to do, back up all the stuff there for us to keep doing the reviews. But that's not really the excuse. I've just been, you know, hella busy doing all this stuff, but I finally found some times. And I know, I think I spoke to Adam, like, there's eight teams still that I haven't really got to. I talked about the grand final afterwards, fresh in my mind, wanting to really kind of get those thoughts. Spoke about Chris's team, but really there's a lot of teams still there to go. And to be honest, some of this stuff feels a little bit dated. There's all these transactions and injuries and all things that interesting to talk about, and I've had a conversation with a couple of people about just casting our mind a little bit towards next season's draft and how there's a few players that are going to be very, very interesting, and we're going to have some absent, obviously, the likes of Jason Tatum and Tyrese Haliburton, who were picks 9 and 10, I think, in the draft, or 10 and 11 this season, not going to be drafted. I assume next time, or October, when we finalize the draft date, which, you know, opens up a things, and, you know, there's question marks around a lot of players. I know I was looking at a draft that we only had maybe two seasons ago, and players like Ja Morant and LaMelo Ball, who I think jumped up to be a, you know, back of the first round pick for the first time in their career, and really now, you know, pushed out. Where do they go? I don't know. There's a lot of really fun kind of stuff. Obviously, free agency's hit. A lot of players staying, but, you know, big trades, things to go. A lot of things that'll be really interesting looking forward to, whether it's October 18th or 4th. We're going through some dates. If you're listening to this podcast and we haven't locked in a date, we're working hard to make sure we get one where everyone can make it there. Will be really fun for us to do. But what we're going to do, hopefully, before then is actually do the reviews. So this one is going to be focusing on the two teams that were, you're finishing higher up on the ladder, but rounding out with kind of Dobes and Adam. And I think it's good to put them together in the podcast because, yeah, Chris came home like a bullet train, but for most of the season, all of the season, with myself, it was Adam and Dobes that were really up the top. And, you know, these are the teams that, you know, had the double chance. And I think had, you know, their best season, really, Dobes and Adam as a coach, you know, and a team that looked like they could go all the way. So I've got to do my best to go through those two teams now, you know, give some thoughts where it kind of landed, what happened. Most of it, you know, positive in terms of what they did and successes of their team to bring them where they were, and do my best to kind of remember as much as possible going through. But yeah, we'll start off those. And I think maybe if we've got a couple of other podcasts, there'll be some teams that we could probably go through a little bit quicker than some of the other ones. I think some of the teams who didn't have the best season, I think the outcome and the review is going to be a little bit more straightforward. But a couple of real fun ones here, starting up with Dobes, who, yeah, finished with the double chance, was fighting his way to have that win to kind of get through to the championship round. But as we said, Chris coming home so strong and hitting form at the right time kind of kept him out. But a lot of positives and real kind of success stories, I think, on Dobes' team. But it'll be fun to kind of go top to bottom through it, because if we do remember, and I remember because it was one of the more interesting reviews after draft, was really this lens of me saying I think he's made a couple of really good picks up top, couple of really good picks at the end, and then the middle was like, oh, I can understand all of these ones, but like there's risks all throughout. And I think some of them paid off in a big way, and then others we definitely saw maybe not so much. And some of that's just through injury, whether it's your LaMelo Ball or even like a Mark Williams. But I mean, this was something that was the reason why that were the risk. So it'll be fun to kind of go top to bottom. We'll remind everyone kind of where people got drafted and kind of go from there. But it's funny, at the top was someone that I don't think I've talked of having that baked in risk. Like I was really happy with him getting kind of picked at number six in the draft and his first pick with Anthony Davis. And it's funny because you have this view, well, Anthony Davis should have this kind of risk element. He's been injury prone. He's had, yes, and we saw that happen here in this weird, tragic way of him dominating, I think, a first quarter and his first game in a new uniform for the Dallas Mavericks before injuring himself and basically being out for the rest of the fantasy season. But, I mean, he was coming off the back, I think, of roughly 78-game season, maybe 76, whatever it was his best season in terms of health and someone that was the cornerstone of my fantasy team the year previous, where I kind of won. Anthony Davis was my first pick, and I did it at six, and there was a few like, oh wow, that's high, and he really kind of wrote it home and was very much worth that pick and did it all for me in a way that you get back here this season, and I felt really comfortable with him going at the same time. And I think you land completely justified in taking him at six. He ends up the season with the fourth highest average, a 36.1, which I think was really in line with, or maybe even a slight dip on what he did last year. But, you know, that's the level of production we're talking about, you know, shy or only of SGA, Giannis, and Nikola Jokic. So pick six is just the... I didn't have a problem with it at all. You can say it was injury risk and he's always going to be that, but no, I think at six, it was the one to go. I always talk about these kind of top ones, and Anthony Davis is that clear one, I think, after. He didn't make the mistake that happened after him in terms of Joel Embiid, and he went really kind of... I thought it was a safe pick, if you want to say that, at six, and it paid off for the most part. It just really kind of hurt him at the end, having him out and really kind of not a part of the run. And it's a brutal kind of thing to happen, to miss your player. It's just someone you can't replace. But, I mean, I think that's just that in a nutshell. It's tragic in a sense of fantasy, not to be too dramatic about it all. But... yeah, I just, he had his healthiest season. I think he was all good in these things. I don't know if that injury that he had is something that you can attribute to an injury history or something he's going to have to be dealing with moving forward. But yeah, I know I don't go into next season, you know, not wanting to take him. At a certain point, I think you can just kind of back. And, you know, that glimpse that we got for 12 minutes for Dallas, you know, that's something you remember a little bit. It's in line with what he was doing. He's been a really good fantasy player. But yeah, Anthony Davis is your first pick. And we move forward. Devin Booker, I think, was the start of kind of the risk. And I felt good about Devin Booker here. It's funny because he's always like this early second round player. But then you get to I don't think he's ever really repaid the faith as much. But we still kind of get tantalized about what he... should be sometimes, and maybe he's kind of touched that ceiling a little bit, especially when the Suns had that kind of run. I think he finished fifth in MVP, and they obviously went all the way to the finals. But you know, he finishes an average with 27.8. I mean, that's fine, but again, like, he keeps going around this mark 14, 15. I think I said on the night, like, if he got to 17, I was going to take him. And then, you know, Kevin Durant, interesting, like, again, you know, averages more points than him, even though Devin Booker gets drafted before him. I think it's someone that you wanted more from. You know, he gets, his average is all the way down that kind of 25-30 mark in terms of the players, closer to 25, I think, here. And while it's fine, you know, he just didn't feel like he was the kind of threat or that reliable kind of bank of points that a lot of the other players were in this second round. You know, your likes of your Jason Tatum, Anthony Towns, even after him drafted like a Jalen Brunson and a Durant, who I said, Jaren Fox, even another one who averaged slightly less than him. So, I mean, he's still in that upper echelon, and I don't go into next season, a season where I think he might be getting paid. It's not $70 million yet, the front end of that contract, and you're like, yeah, like, he's a guy that I feel happy to hitch my wagon to, but yeah, I think when you draft him at this point, you're hoping for a little bit more. I think that's reasonable to say, and he was out a little bit injured, I think, at the front end of the season. But, you know, it is what it is, a 27.8, I think it was, is fine. It's just, yeah, these were the things that it could have propelled him a little bit further. The Lamella one, obviously, is the bigger one here. I think on draft night, I said, I don't want to get sucked into the Lamella too early. And it was just an idea of health here. Like, that's the only bet on health. Like, he had finished the previous two seasons injured. This ends up being, I think, the third in a row. I can't remember if he played the last few games, but he obviously was injured at the end of the fantasy season, I think. So, three seasons in a row, let's just say that he kind of hasn't finished healthy. And I think for three seasons in a row, he's been, you know, drafted, you know, in the top kind of 30. He's 36 here, but yeah, the 2 years before kind of even higher. So he keeps kind of slipping, and this was the decision, I think. And it's a fair roll of the dice for you to say, well, I'm going to get a top 20 kind of player, and I can bank him here at 36 because of the health warning, and just cross my fingers. And I just don't know who else. Are you going to do that again next season? I mean, someone might, because what you see there is obviously of a height where you can't really get that from a lot of players, and where he does fills all the boxes. And I think the 26.5 that he finishes with doesn't kind of paint some of the picture, just because some of the off games and the injuries and him kind of warming back into it. Like, when you saw the heights, and there's these couple of weeks, or, you know, 2, 3, 4 stretches when he's like really hitting these heights, you know, he is that guy who can average, you know, your 30, 32 and really be up the top. It's just, okay, well, what do we do with him here? You know, Charlotte keep kind of bringing in talent, but they're forced to kind of mold everything around the LaMelo Ball kind of archetype of how they play, because that's just what they're kind of forced in, I think, when, you know, you're in the business of having a LaMelo Ball run point. But what does that mean in a review of, you know, Dobbs' team and how it had this year? It just kind of fell apart at the end, the way it did the two seasons beforehand. And when you're investing kind of this kind of capital up top with it, it can't do anything but really hurt. And that's when I think, when we were previewing the finals going thing, it was like, well, there's these question marks, and if they can get healthy, like, it's all systems go. But those question marks they're not just question marks. They're huge kind of blinding red siren lights right now at this stage, because it's so hard to trust, I think. So it's a tough one, because again, you can see it kind of panning out. But I think I said, like, I didn't want to touch him before, you know, round four, and I was happy to have someone else kind of take a risk. I think from memory, I had him on my big board really on the same spot, like 36. This is where he should be ranked. But yeah, if it gets to 36 and he's the only one there, it's like, all right, I'd take him. But I'd really, really like, you know, him on an early round four kind of thing. And yeah, we'll see what's the case in a couple months' time with him going forward, because it's a hard one. But yeah, another one that the big almost polar opposite, this huge hit of Cade Cunningham and his next pick is the home run that kind of really makes up for some of the kind of the hard times you had with a couple of the other players, or just this little erosion of what you wanted from a LaMelo or a Devin Booker. Well, okay, Cade's kind of hit in a huge way, and I think this is the second year in a row that he drafted him. And it's funny, because the year before, maybe even I had him way up in my kind of projections. I'm like, this is the year, I'm a Cade Cunningham believer, let's go. And he really struggled, and he had the injuries and kind of things didn't go that way. And then this season, it was like, oh, well, how much stock do you still have? You know, he gets to round four and you grab him, and this is a guy that just, you know, in terms of fantasy, but also with Detroit's kind of progression a little bit, I've really kind of, you know, made that step. He's like, well, yeah, this is what everyone was kind of hoping for. This is what, you know, some things kind of, whether it's injury or just kind of time and adjustment, like getting into knowing how to control. Because that was the biggest thing at the start, I think, in his rookie season. I'm like, I look at this guy and I can see the control. Obviously, there's like little things with his scoring and, you know, does he fit this mold of this, you know, run and gun kind of point guard? No, but like, you could see the decision making, you could see the IQ, you could see some of like the, for lack of a better word, the balls, in terms of like, I'm the guy here, like, I'll take the shots, I know what I'm doing, I can get people involved. Like, it was all kind of there, and that's where I was all in on. And then when it took the time, you kind of, you doubt where it's going to go. But it's all, I think it makes, you know, people look a bit silly who were kind of, I'm not sure what kind of Cade Cunningham was going to be. And Dobes has cashed in here, I think, letting him, you know, drop all the way to 45 for him to pick him up here, because it was an absolute home run. The guy averages 31.3, and I think that's about 12th in average over the season. You know, so huge win, the kind of things that really set you up. And Julius Randle, in another big way, was a fun one to track, because the conversation about what Julius Randle was at the end of the season was very, very different than to what it was kind of at the start as he was kind of getting going. So it's funny kind of where he's landed, and then you like an average of 23.7 doesn't, you know, make for like great reading in a, you know, a place where you drafted him at 56, because that puts him, you know, definitely in that kind of back 60 to 70 kind of place with the average. Yeah, early 60s. So, I mean, it's round about the mark, but it's not like this big, it's a guy of talent that you should be kind of getting in the round five. And it's funny, yeah, that he kind of came on quite a bit at the end. And the risk was at the start, and probably what I talked about, was the whole Minnesota fit. Like, that would have been the thing and the issue kind of coming in, because he had these Knicks seasons and he was always kind of fantasy friendly for that bit. But then there was the identity on where he goes and is he a winning player and all this stuff that, while I don't give a shit in a fantasy lens and where the points come from, well, it impacts, you know, his role and his playing time and kind of how it all fits and what's it going to look like in Minnesota. And I think it was probably the time where he goes and it landed fine. It's just funny that it's hard now to remember, but I remember it was like that roller coaster a little bit along the way, and you know, Minnesota kind of finding themselves out a little bit after moving Karl Anthony Towns and getting Randle. And I know it was funny that Dante DiVincenzo, which we'll get to, I think, with Jake's review, that at the time was like, everyone's like, oh, this is the secret piece of this is the sexy one. And I got into it a little bit because I think I said I really like the draft pick. Yeah, Julius Randle was the guy. He was good in a lot of the spots. I'm really interesting. I think they just pick up his option and roll it back next season. But yeah, I think he's, there's stuff around him being a little bit of a change kind of player, and I wonder where it is moving forward. But yeah, fun one from his draft. But you could understand why some of the risk maybe being spoke about. Miles Bridges next. Yeah, I don't know what to say about Miles Bridges now. Like, he's a good fantasy player. There's a 24.4. I think the risk I was saying is like, okay, we've got guys coming through now. We've got Brandon Miller. There's a whole LaMelo Ball thing. I think we're well past, and people just won't talk about, you know, him bashing up his girlfriend and, you know, okay, he's just millions of dollars richer now. But Brandon Miller gets hurt, you know, there's all this stuff, and he just kind of fits into what he did the season before. And it's not like I'm saying, like, I drafted him the year before on the back of everything too. So do what you got to do. But yeah, he's fine. The whole thing about him here, I think when I said at the time was, yeah, like, I feel like other people were kind of emerging and what is it going to be? But I mean, he averages 24.4. He does his shit. Like, that's, it's good for someone you pick at 65 here. So a win. Cam Thomas was a really interesting one. It just doesn't kind of happen because of the injury. And he didn't have seasons where he was like out with injury before, but this is like the third year in a row where he misses chunks of games, whether it's ankle, shoulder, hamstring was the one here. Brooklyn was weird. The whole allure of like, well, they've got no one else, he's just going to score, that was the benefit. But then when it's like, oh, well, we don't care if you keep missing games at this point because we're not in it this season. We're seeing him with his restricted free agency now. We're not sure where you are in kind of the future of what we're doing. And I was all on him at 66, yeah. So I'm around behind with some of it. We'll work it out. We're picking it up still. But, yeah, his pick here at 66, I was fine because I remember saying, oh, actually, I regret, maybe I should have drafted him 2 picks earlier when I got Duren instead, but I'm glad I didn't. Duren was really big for me down the stretch. and went into it. But Cam Thomas kind of was the opposite. You saw everything early. Like, here's the scoring. This is what you're going to do. The assist came on. Like, it was something that was real. It's not outrageous. I think 3.8 for the season. But that was, you know, down on like a 1 or something like that. Like, he just didn't pass the ball. You know, there was really incremental improvements across the board, I think, in his game. And it kind of came across, but it didn't jump out. And the early kind of progress and real kind of goodwill and scoring and fantasy production that you saw tapered off slowly to the point, and then he got injured, and then it kind of was done, which is a shame. I think I was kind of about this pick for the risk of him just, like, he's going to get buckets. I know people, you know, gambling's fucking poison, I hate it, but there was all this stuff about, oh, you know, sneaky points leader Cam Thomas. Like, that was real stuff going around, like, just before the start of the season, because, like, they're like, he's going to get 30 shots a game. And, you know, so, you saw glimpses of that, but not at the level you're wanting, maybe, as a coach. But I still like to kind of pick. The IG Barrett one was a real, real win. I think if you took the Cade Cunningham scenario that I said, but then multiplied it by 2 or 3 in terms of, like, when is it going to happen? I'm going to keep drafting him. I keep drafting him. And maybe it's not. Like, new scenario, like, new kind of location, real kind of change of scenery, that kind of stuff. But Toronto was weird, and I know it wasn't until the back end of the season that, you know, whether it's Ingram just not playing, but there was the Quickley injury. You know, Scotty Barnes was hurt early too, broken orbital bone or something, and RJ Barrett just, like, really clearly kind of came to the front as their best fantasy option. He was a really kind of, like, you saw the kind of elements and optionality to his scoring in New York, I think. His shot was always a bit, I'm not trusting this to go in, but I can, like, I like him, you know, in terms of potentially getting the line and kind of finishing through contact. And, you know, he has options, I think, when he gets, catches the ball on the elbow and stuff. Like, he's just got that scorer mentality a little bit. And we saw that kind of come. I think, remember watching games early in the season, and Raptors were in a lot of games, so, you know, tight finishes. And then, like, RJ Barrett's the guy, we're going to him. And, you know, you love that for fantasy, I think, where the game slows down and everything starts going through your guy. And, you know, to the tune of your 24.8 fantasy. Yeah, I think that's 54th best average for someone you draft at 75. Ding, ding. Like, I'm happy with that. Don't know what RJ Barrett's doing next season. There's a lot of talk about Toronto, and people confuse on what they are with this kind of high payroll locked into, you know, these players. But where do they fit? Are they going to be good? I don't know. He's one to kind of watch and where he kind of goes. But for this season, he was a big win for Dobes, even if he, like, kind of tatered off. The miss was next, kind of 86 with Bradley Beal. When you dive into the numbers, it's not catastrophic, but you remember, like, it didn't feel like he was playing all these games too. I haven't got my basketball reference on how much he missed, but I think I remember out of the times I played Dobes, and I think it was 3, including finals, like, he was never someone that I was worried about. He always popped up and missed games. Even his, like, good games were fine, and it was too many low games in between that. Obviously, he's been, you know, stretched, waived. Now the Clippers, I don't know where he's going to be. There was a big deal about him kind of coming off the bench, and all the stuff about him just kind of not wanting to be there and buy in, and it comes across. Like, I know it's all kind of numbers in terms of fantasy, but you could feel that in some of a guy that I just don't know if you wanted to really roster. And I think he was injured. Maybe that's the reason he got dropped at the end. But I think it came down to a real kind of negative miss on someone in round 9. And, you know, Amen Thompson goes the pick after. Denny Avdia goes 2 picks after that. You know, there's quality on the board still. And it's, you know, these are the things you kind of look at when you miss. The Clint Capella pick next. I think I said at the time, maybe. I was like, I just don't know anymore. Obviously, we see kind of the role diminish there. to a point where, you know, he's in Houston now, I think, but an average of 17.7 is not something you were stoked. It was just that guy, and he had been that guy for years, and of like, he's a center you can rely on and kind of get late in the draft, and he just seems to average, you know, 22, 23, and he's just this rock solid. But every year it was like, well, I don't know where the minutes are going, and here it kind of hit. Like, he only averaged 21.5 minutes for the season, which for an old kind of center who's quite, you know, he's not going to get you negatives. He's getting you like easy buckets and rebounds. And that's enough to kind of do his job, and you can do that in a small amount of minutes. But when you really see your kind of role being diminished that way, it's never easy as an own. And I think for round 10, again, it's early enough that you miss, like, Jakob Poeltl goes three picks after and averages a 25. But I mean, Scoot and Jonathan Kuminga, someone I picked, were also picked just before Jakob Poeltl as well. So it's not just him making mistakes. There's a lot of us out here at round 10 now, swinging and missing. But Mark Williams, yeah, I mean, we know the tune. He's that kind of an enigma mystery that, you know, he gets traded and voided because of potential issues that they have with his body. And I just don't know. When he's playing, he's a beast. What's his average here? It's like 26.2. Tasty. Like, that's someone you're drafting here at pick 106 and you're getting like top 40 value. It's a no-brainer, but the whole thing is, well, how many games is he playing? You can average, you know, Wemby numbers if you missed, you know, all the season. And the issue is, it's not even just like, it's like, well, I think he started off slow. It's like, oh, when is he going to come back? And then he comes back and it's like, oh, well, he's missing a game every, you know, week. And then he's missing two. And I remember looking at his box, like the box score kind of sheet spread just before finals. And I think he played like two games in a row, like once out of like a spread of like 15, 16. Like, he was playing, he was off. He played two in a row, he was off for two. Like, it was just all over the place. And I don't know. You have to like look at people talking about his health coming into next season about where you want to put him. So it was a risky one, and you'd have to ask Dobes whether he was more hurt than help, but we'll see. The huge home run here, and it's funny because there's these home runs and ones that hurts, and that's what I was saying with the risk. But Josh Hart at pick 115, yeah, smashing, killed it, amazing. What was his average at the end? Because I know it was like, I want to say just off the top of my head, like 28th best-ish in the league. And it's just out of that. Whereabouts are you, Josh Hart? So it's about 40. Okay, so I overplayed it, but he averaged a 26.3. I think that might have gone down. Maybe it was high. Like, maybe that's right, because there was one point where I think maybe it was like 27.5, even higher, which then puts him up to where I thought, you know, where you're saying that puts him up at, you know, a Bam Adebayo, Tyrese Halliburton kind of level in terms of averages. And I think he was there over the season. And it's funny because I think my review, I don't know about this one, because I think the point was we saw him playing these like 42 minutes a game level the season previous for a long stretch of the back end of the season and even in playoffs, and because they had all these guys out and injuries. And I think the whole point coming forward was like, oh, well, you know, they've got Karl Anthony Towns in. You know, we're getting a full healthy season of OG Anunoby. Mikal Bridges obviously in the fold now. Like, well, where's Josh Hart's minutes? But no, like, he fixed it in really clearly into their kind of starting five. And Tom Thibodeau just, you know, obviously ran with these guys and to a great, you know, successful effect, at least over the regular season and some in playoffs. And, you know, he averages 9.6 rebounds for the season. You know, the scoring, he's never going to be this, like, you know, kind of shooter guy, but it was just the hustle points. It was all the stuff that just made him this kind of fantasy darling, because you just didn't have to worry about him. They don't, you know, run plays for him or anything like that. Almost six assists for a guy like Josh Hart. He was a huge, huge, huge win for Doze for this season, and someone who gets drafted earlier, I'm assuming next season. By how much is the question? K Calvin Johnson, I didn't like at the time. I think that was a bit of a miss. We gloss over Cam Johnson. I really liked. He ended up being a real solid kind of draft for him. 21.7. You know, nothing super duper sexy, but for someone who sticks on your roster all season, and you draft him 135 in the second last round, I mean, that's nothing but a win for you. And Draymond Green was another guy at the time, and I was like, I mean, I don't want to draft him, but someone should, and you get him in the last round, and he's better than a lot of other people that have been drafted. 18.7. He doesn't knock your socks off. I think he's got dropped at the end, and you have to deal with, you know, potential for an impending suspension at any moment. But, I mean, you can do a lot worse than that. I think he hung around basically his whole season, which, you know, speaks volumes to it. And then I think I've already talked about it, but the additions of Norman Powell, I think, was one of the better free agent pickups there that really rounded it off. So, yeah, not to say that I was, like, right. I was wrong with a lot of stuff, but I think the correct read was, like, in this, like, inbuilt risk for a lot of people, and we had these home runs, but also some things that kind of fell off. And it's a shame because most of it was due to injury rather than him being wrong about guys, which is, you know, Clint Capella and Bradley Beal, I think you're wrong selections. But some of the other ones, maybe Cam Thomas, but, like, you know, Yield Mallow, to some degree of kind of your Mark Williams and your Anthony Davis and stuff. It's like injury really, really hurt. Injury hurts, you know, a lot of teams, but, you know, it doesn't mean it's not an excuse and a reason to point at for a lot of it. So, yeah, I think that was Dobbs' season. A real smart drafting, I think I said. It'd be interesting where a lot of his players go next season and where he kind of takes his team if he wants to see the blueprint of that. You know, that kind of worked for a lot of stuff, or if it's kind of a mix of wanting to look at guys who are sleepers or new teams or injured previously and have a bit of a balance. I don't know. There's no real formula to it all, but it's just something to track. It's fun. All right, well, that was Dobbs' team. And the next one that we have of teams that did really well were Adam. That's what I said before. The natural born Millers here. Someone he drafted and traded away. He was a little bit active in the trades, I think. With the a couple at least. But yeah, a team that I think I said at the top, and I'm pretty certain I was like, after draft, I probably had a pretty glowing review of his draft, and I'm like, I really like this team. I think this team's going to be better than it's been in a while. And it was. Things fell apart a little bit, I think, just before finals, and, you know, from memory, and it's going back now, so I'm wrong, but, like, he holds on and kind of gets there, and then it's like, well, maybe we'll see, but there was a lot of IR. I know, just looking at a team, it still has outs here. Brandon Ingram was an absolute write-off, someone who was, you know, doing quite well. John Collins was massive for him, and Ja Morant is probably the big one, obviously, standing out here. But he makes the right decision up top with Shea at 5. Awesome home run, like MVP, obviously, player. I just said before, you know, average third, highest 37.9, played maybe every game. I can't remember. Played most of them. Huge win. Set yourself up, you know, and I don't think it might have been a foregone conclusion. Like, most people would have taken him at 5 after your Doncic, Wemby, Giannis, Jokic. But you still have to do it. I don't know if everyone would have done it. Like, whether people wanted to go Sabonis or Davis, or even if people were still thinking of Embiid maybe as a healthy option. I think you still kind of had to get him here, and it was a good one. I was pretty high on the Ja Morant one as well. I think I said in similar for it being 2 picks ahead of me, Booker went, then Ja went, and then it was my turn. And I think I said I would have taken either Booker or Ja if they fell to me. We have to have a bit of a re-evaluation of what Ja is, potentially as a player, and what he is fantasy-wise. It's very similar to Melo. You know, he's a top 7-8 pick, has all of his shit. Last year was weird with the suspension and him getting drafted by Adam as well, I think, like late in the draft, because he was missing whatever it was, 20-something games maybe. But he comes into this season, you're like, he's healthy, no suspension, let's go. Yeah, and it doesn't kind of recapture that form. He doesn't get back to kind of being that guy. He misses a lot of games again, and it's not even those like extended, like, I'm out for a couple of weeks. It's like, oh, well, he's missing here and there. He just like needs to kind of take care of his body. You have the whole shit where he's like, oh, I'm not going to dunk anymore because I'm trying to, like, you know, make sure I'm healthy. And the shot, I think, and I don't have the stats here, you know, trajects like a little bit of the wrong way, or at least plateaus with what he's going to do. I'm still like a believer of the talent and kind of what he brings and the winning basketball around someone like that. And I think they've put him in a lot of positions to succeed and had good success trying to do that. But I mean, in terms of just like a raw number and some eye tests on the success of the Grizzlies, and maybe you can kind of point to, and a lot of Grizzly peoples have been doing this, about the coach trying to run an, you know, offensive kind of style that doesn't really work for them, and they, you know, change the coach and next season is going to be different, and you see how where this goes. But from this season, you know, your average of 25.8 just doesn't really give you what you want for someone that you're drafting here at 16. So you know, he finishes here, I think that's around 40 or 38th on the average, which, you know, puts him a couple of rounds behind where he gets here, which I wonder where he goes kind of next season. But, I mean, in the vacuum, just not something you want. You would have wanted a lot more from Ja here. But you go down, and who's he go next? He goes Pascal Siakam. Yeah, I think, like, you showed, like, a 25.8. He averaged just, or basically the same as Ja Morant, scored more points to him, obviously. That's the tick with Pascal. Like, he plays the minutes. He's really reliable. He's been as high as, like, you know, a late second rounder. So I think to get him here at early third rounder was a safe bet. And I think the safety kind of pays off, especially around where, you know, you've got that instability elsewhere. So that was a really good pick. Obviously, next season with no Tyrese is going to be an interesting one for him. Both where he goes and how he's going to look in the season. But a nice one there, no problems. The Rudy Gobert one's interesting because he was really good, and then I think he kind of traded high, and I was a fan of the trade at the time to kind of bring in Wemby. But then it really, you know, Wemby gets injured and it really, really hurts your stock moving forward. And that was probably the biggest kind of pillar of him kind of when I talked about injury before, not even talking about Wemby, who's not on his team, who he had to drop, and trading, you know, stock to do so there. But Rudy Gobert, I think he drafted him in the right position. I think this is where you want to be taking him. He has a real form slump and then is amazing for Chris in the playoffs and, you know, gets his average back up to 25, which I think 25 is still probably the low mark for him in the last five seasons, or at least, like, that's down on, I might be wrong, but I feel like that's kind of down on what he had been, and people always have kind of bumped him down a little bit in worrying. Maybe he had one kind of bad season where he really dropped off, but yeah, I think this was kind of smart and to get him here, and him being a kind of a real cornerstone of the Wemby trade was good and smart for him. And Desmond Bane was a really interesting one, because he started really bad, and to the point where we talked about that Wemby trade, and I've mentioned before that, like, I think he was going to be into it, but he was so out of form that it was harder for him to move on from him. But he came good, 24.8 average in the end. Again, he misses, you know, games, but yeah, I think it ends up being a good pick. There was patience involved with it, but there's a reason why I think Desmond Bane gets picked here, and we'll see kind of how it goes with the Orlando. But yeah, cool. And the Miles Turner, he's a bit of a homer pick. Reliable, plays. There's talent on the board. Not Kyle Kuzma, who goes four picks after, but Jalen Johnson, Franz Wagner, Jaren Jackson Jr., all going the next three picks. The guys that averaged, you know, 25, 26, and then 30 in the case of, no, sorry, 29 in the case of Jalen Johnson. And you've kind of picked Miles before. It's a fine pick in the end, you know, 56, draft pick 56 puts him, you know, quite a bit after that. What did I say his average was? 21 point something. You know, that's going back to, it's almost like 80 in the end. Where are you, buddy? In terms of his average. So, yeah, about 65. You want more, obviously. I think there's just more options to go to. But in terms of like an anchor and someone you can rely on and someone that just seems to play and kind of get stuff done, like, yeah, it's not where you go bad. Like, that's it's not the issues with kind of your draft. It's just interesting in hindsight when you lay it all out, whether Miles Turner could have been, you know, someone you could have got a center-ish type player like that in a couple of rounds, or you want to really kind of lock in on that's your guy at this point. But it's not the reason why anything went balls up. Brandon Ingram probably is part of the reason. You can't expect the injury. In hindsight, like, he would have been pretty stoked that you get someone at Brandon Ingram at 65 and he averaging 23.9. But he was a weird one. He was out, gets traded. You think he's coming back, but he just kind of doesn't and gets shut down. And was it an ankle? And it's hard because sometimes, like, oh no, it's like a fray. He's got like months, and some of them it's only a couple of weeks. And his was just one that just didn't get done. And then there's the weird like contract scenario with him, and they ended up extending him. It's all bit weird. I don't know what he's going to look like next year. We kind of forgot about Brandon Ingram. He's a bit of that forgotten kind of guy, and someone that he drafted, yeah, in round 7 here, that just wasn't a part of him. And it's a shame because I think when he went down at the time, Adam was like, you know, right at the top of the ladder, and it's like, well, he's got this guy to come back. He's got a 23.7 average guy to slot right back in, but it just never happened. Brandon Miller, I thought it was a good pick at the time. I still think it was a pretty good pick. Things didn't happen, and then he got injured. It's funny, they're talking about, like, when Jalen Williams at the end of the season, they announced he had this wrist injury that they're going to, like, fix up. I remember reading something and being like, oh, that was the same injury, basically, that Brandon Miller had. And they shut down Brandon Miller for the season, and Jalen Williams kind of played through it. More to play for, obviously. He gets a ring out of it, but I just thought that was an interesting wrinkle. But the thing was, he traded off him at the right time. Ends up with me. But it's okay. Didn't matter in the end. CJ McCollum? I don't know where he goes next year. He was fine. He averaged 21.9, was hurt at the end. That was a bit of the risk of kind of going some of these older players, I think, a little bit in terms of the managing. But it was a shame. Kind of shitty New Orleans season. Yeah, neither here or there. Don't have strong opinions. The Scoot Anderson one kind of sucks again. He just averages 15.4. He gets dropped to some point. Two seasons in a row, Adams kind of had him and it's just gone nowhere. I think you drafted him round 6 last year. This year, you're like, I can get him for cheaper, but I still believe, I still think there's something there. Doesn't happen. I don't know if anyone's still on the Scooter or you're all jumped off. Let's see about the whole Anthony Simons thing. I think he's a pick 2. You kind of locked in, but at some point the pedigree doesn't mean you're gonna be a fantasy draft. Like, whether you're talking pick 2s like Wiseman or Bagley, I think was like the. Not that you don't want to curse him like that, but I mean, we're entering year 3 now and you want to hear something. But for Adam, he's kind of rolled the dice at him twice and got burned in a big way. Last year, it's a horrific one, you know, investing that much capital in someone who's just a 0 for you. Less than a 0 because it hurts you just owning him for the start until you pull the trigger. And this was somewhat the same. He had a patch. Because I remember I got him off free agency, but even then he was inconsistent, and it wasn't like these glimpses didn't pave their way into real, you know, massive games so much. Sometimes it was a bit streaky if he was hitting his shots, and I think the shot was coming on a little bit. I'm fine with him taking the shots and kind of shooting through it. Like, I'd be almost. Doesn't mean just take bad shots. And I think some of more of his bad shots are the ones inside, the kind of fadeaway mid-ranges or the, like, leaning into contact. Like, I'm fine with him shooting threes. I have no problem with that. And I think, I hope he kind of does it more. And we saw a little bit of him. His best games were when he had a lot of these threes, I think, and they were going in. Like, but one to watch. right here, it kills you. You can't. It's hard to draft guys at this point and them being ones you need to drop. But, you know, John Collins was massive for him. The problem was the kind of weird injury in Utah kind of tanking him out of the season, because he was weird. And Adam would have to remind me, because he'll know. But he was out, and then he was on extended personal leave or something, and then he came. Like, it was weird. But early in the season, he was a huge part of some of those wins. You know, he averaged 24.8. I remember, just because I drafted Markkanen and Keontae George, and I had a little bit of Utah stock, and I'm like watching the games. I'm like, John Collins is the best player out here. And it was, in some games, it wasn't close. He's coming off the bench on some, just destroying. Yeah, we'll see what he does in the Clippers. But it was a good pick until he's out. And then that's the hardest thing. You know, I've already said that with Dobbs. Like, you can make the right decisions, and then context has to be some of it when you draft these guys. Like, and that's why you're getting a John Collins at a value pick here at 105. Like, was it 105? There's a reason why he's here. Like, we know what he could do. He was late second rounder, you know, five seasons ago, but it's inbuilt into your analysis on these guys to say, well, he's not like a rock solid role for Utah. He's not huge in their plans. Like, he's been trying to be traded, you know, all this kind of time. Like, and then you take this risk and you win out in a massive way. But you can be both pissed and annoyed and say that it was a really good pick, but then almost go like, actually, you know, it's not the biggest shock in the world that John Collins wasn't a part of Utah's plans in the last couple of months of the season, I guess. But I think it was still fine. Michael Porter Jr. was a good pick. Someone that I was annoyed that I didn't pick up. 22.6 average was higher than that for a lot of time, I think. I think it was just value for this point. A weird kind of season for him, I think, outside of fantasy. Because I think fantasy, you look at the scores and you looked at him probably being more inconsistent than he'd been for a long time. I think I remember at several points in the season checking in on him, his box spreadsheet. I'm like, oh, fuck, man, he's hitting 20s. Like, all the time. That's like the floor on what he's doing right now, for a huge chunk of the season. And then, you know, I don't know, you put it all like him being hurt and not that great in the playoffs, and now Denver obviously going a different direction, and it'll be interesting with him for Brooklyn next season. But I think, you know, we've shown here, like, there was really something that I think was a calculated risk for Adam to go here and bring in someone of his talent that has gone earlier in drafts before and really kind of paved the way potentially to one of his better fantasy seasons that we've seen. So that was a good pick. Stephen Castle. Now we get into his three kind of roll dices with the rookies. And I know we've talked about it before, and it was funny. It's like, I think I said, if one of them can stick, that's great. I think maybe he said something similar, and two of them a stick. Alex Saar and a Stephen Castle. Reed Sheppard's a huge bust. That's fine. You just move on for it. I think the Stephen Castle one's more interesting because, you know, he's a rookie of the year and it came on really well late. But, you know, he had these good games with few and far between the start. And it's fine. He's a rookie. It's what you expect. It's hard to look at his average of 16.8 and really actually understand what the fuck that means, because, you know, at the start, if you're getting 10, 12 minutes, you know, there's a 5 here, a 6 there. Like, it's hard to kind of comprehend that. But, I mean, it does give you a little bit of, like, you know, that's what he was for the season. And if Adam owned him for the whole season, like, that's kind of where it is. But, I mean, I think it was good in terms of he got him in the fold and he was winning games early while he was going through this, you know, adjustment, finding himself, his role in the team, doing all the rookie stuff. So that if you're winning and then he comes on later, it's a huge kind of get that you've baked into your roster and are hopefully able to see the benefits. So I think that was a really good one. And Alex Saar, I think, was similar too. Like, I know he had some off games, some shooting stuff, but 17.8 average for the season. All the stuff about, you know, the Stephen Castle rookie learning curve is the same. But I remember him having some really, really strong weeks. He had a couple of bad weeks, and that hurt when you were relying on him late. But I really remember him having some strong showings late. And for your last pick of the draft, was someone that stood out. There was a few. There was a lot of hits this year in the end of the draft. Dyson Daniels, Trey Murphy, Alex Saar. They're probably the big ones. I mean, I just said Draymond Green was fine. Chris Paul, I think, stuck around on Walsh's list all season. So, I mean, that's enough as well of a win. But, yeah, that was it. They were the two ones. I think usually I do, like, best picks, worst picks for the season. I think do it at the start, but maybe I do it at the end of the season too. I don't remember. But let's do it anyway. We'll start with Adams because it's here. I think he's really had a... it's hard. John Collins can't be a home run for all the reasons I said that he missed. But I think Shea just up top. Maybe that's a cop-out. But I think just he was like the bedrock of everything. It wasn't a foregone conclusion that you're going five. I think that's your best pick is the MVP of the season. Your worst pick is Scoot. But then you've done really good work at the back end, I think, with Porter Jr. and Castle. And then for Dobes, I think the Kay Cunningham pick like just stands out for me. It was a really kind of good one there. The worst pick's probably Bradley Beal. And, you know, he's done really good, again, around the Josh Hart stuff, which is probably... Yeah, no, Kate was the best, and I think Josh was a really good addition there too. But, yeah, that's about as long as we're going to do the previews. I think the other ones we'll do closed. It's been a little bit of a dust-off-the-cobwebs kind of podcast, but it felt natural, you know, like riding a bike. They're here if people want to listen to them. This is where the podcasts are starting to die, I guess, now that, you know, some league's over and free agency's happened. So maybe there is a bit of a... space on the airwaves for something you want to sink your teeth in and start reminding yourself, oh yeah, that's what I did, and prepare for our upcoming draft in early October-ish, mid. We'll see where we land on the date. But yeah, thanks everyone again. Hope you enjoyed it if you're listening, and we'll get to the other teams when we can. Thanks everyone.